It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It is a good day to talk about Andor, episode 4. I am your host, Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Gardner.
Hey, hey, folks. Welcome back.
And you're stuck with just the two of us today. We have no special guest this week. We like to spice it up for you guys so you don't have to just hear the two of us. But this week, it'll unfortunately be just the two of us. Stay tuned for future weeks where we will definitely be bringing you some new guests. Maybe not every week, but we definitely have some people lined up that we hope you will like to hear their opinions about the series, Andor, and some that you definitely already heard on this podcast before, some recurring special guests as well. So stay tuned for that. But yes, today we are talking about the fourth episode of the new Disney Plus Star Wars TV show, Andor. This episode is titled Aldani, and this is GDT, like I said at the top. But if you're unfamiliar, we are doing a bonus miniseries right now on Andor. They will be releasing, like this one is, on Thursdays, which is a day after the Disney Plus release of the actual show. Give you guys a day to watch it, catch up, and us a day to record about it. So this week, and most of the upcoming weeks until episode 12 drops and season 1 is over, you'll be getting Thursday episodes with me, Gardner, and sometimes a guest on Andor. And on top of those, if you're familiar with GDT, you know that we have the MPU, Marvel Podcasting Universe, where we go movie by movie through the MCU and talk to you about those. We also talk about new releases as well. So next Wednesday, you guys will be getting our reaction to 4-4-4 Love and Thunder. So stay tuned for that. And then after that, we continue with our retroactive discussion of previous MCU movies. We are currently in phase 2. Stay tuned for that next Wednesday, and all following Wednesdays we will have MCU episodes hosted by CB, Mac, Jalen, and myself. And on top of those two bonus episodes a week, we also have our full-length episodes with Gardner and I, where we talk to a special guest about themselves, often in an interview, or about something else that they want to discuss. This week we will be talking to Dennis Mallon, who is known for many, many acting credits, and you've definitely seen him in something or the other, but we will give you some links to watch some of his short films and other links to see where you can find him in feature-length films as well. So look in the podcast description so you can find out a little bit more about Dennis and be prepared for our episode, which will be dropping tomorrow, which is an interview with him. So there you have it, folks. We have Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday episodes, MCU, Andor right now, and Friday full-length episodes. That's what we have on GDT. Now let's get into today's discussion of Andor, episode 4, season 1, titled Aldani. This episode was directed by Susanna White, and we went over the cast of the entire series in our recap of episodes 1-3, so I'm not going to do that each time, but shout out to everyone who is involved, cast, crew, top to bottom. We will be shouting out the new directors of each episode, but again, you can find the cast online or in our recap of episodes 1-3. So we like to start our discussions off with our initial thoughts, just broad discussion of how we felt about what we watched. So Gardner, we'll kick it to you. What did you feel broadly about Andor episode 4?
Yeah, overall, this show continues to deliver. It's giving me what I want from a show like this. I'm getting realistic, grounded human stakes and conversations and political intrigue and people sneaking around in the dark corners of the universe and plotting. And it's giving me, and this might just be because I'm watching the show right now for the very first time, but it's giving me Game of Thrones vibes in the sense that you've got conversations with a lot of subtext, a lot of substance, and people are plotting against one another, and you feel like these individual conversations, while the pacing up front might feel slow, you know that they're of import. You know that there are going to be consequences coming later. And overall, this is just more of what I want. I feel like my interest in Star Wars has been reinvigorated from this show after Obi-Wan, and I liked that show a fair amount, but I don't know. It felt like we were just kind of getting samey content, and I was a little burnt out on it, but this is really reinvigorated my interest in this world, and I'm so happy to be back because I love this world when it's good, and this show just continues to be really good. And I'm excited to talk about this episode because Mon Mothma is back, bitches, and it rules.
Yeah, I just like being in this universe. I like seeing things that make me feel like I'm in Star Wars, so that's always going to draw me in to begin with. But like you said, Gardner, I think it's definitely well done so far. It's not falling into some of the traps of other Star Wars properties, which other people have mentioned as well, both visually, storytelling, you can name a bunch of different things, I think, where it feels unique for sure. But also, I think I'm going to reiterate something that I brought up in our recap of the first three episodes, where I think the uniqueness, or boldness isn't the right word, un-Star Wars-ness is potentially exaggerated by some people. I think overall, it is still Star Wars. Obviously, I mean, aesthetically, it varies in some ways, but like we've mentioned already, it is very clear that you're in the Star Wars universe in many ways. So it's not really going that crazy there, which isn't necessarily what people want. But storytelling wise, I think, and feeling like we're expanding the universe is what people mean by it being different and unique for a Star Wars property. And I don't disagree with that. I just think that, again, maybe we could push the boundaries a little bit more. And it is still, I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing it here too much. I'm just maybe tempering expectations, if that makes sense, where I don't think by any stretch of the imagination it's groundbreaking television at all, for example, if that makes sense. It's maybe potentially semi-groundbreaking for Star Wars, and it's what people have been asking for. And again, I think to some degree, like, I think you could still push it further into the seediness and the almost just go R-rated with it type situation, which is maybe asking too much, and we're dipping our toe in. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't think Lucasfilm is gonna go R-rated.
Right, especially not now that, and it's been a while now, but now that Disney owns them, obviously that's less likely, I feel like, although Deadpool has maybe opened that door a little bit. But my point is that I just don't want people to get too excited, especially if you haven't seen it yet and you're hearing the hype around it, because basic or generic aren't the right words, but I would say it leans more to that than groundbreaking innovation for a property that's not Star Wars, if that makes sense. And again, that sounded negative. I'm enjoying this, but for me, it's just, I'm glad that it exists and I want it there, but I think we need more than this. And we need, like, again, to expand our, not just geography, but our timeline as well. Because I do still, and I brought this up again in the first recap, but 5 years before the main events of the real original lore of the trilogy, it's like, come on, 5 years, let's go all the way back. Or let's go even, you know, again, and this could even be said about Mando. It's like, we're like just at the aftermath. And I know that they're trying to fit that between the two trilogies at that point. We're doing that, but it's like, fuck it, let's go 1,000 years one direction, or even a couple hundred years one direction. And I know I don't know all the lore of what happens there, but other people do. And they've said things that seem to be implying that there's exciting stories that could be told for sure, especially like with the whole history of the Jedi and stuff like that.
The High Republic, baby.
Right. But overall, again, I'm happy with it, but I just want to ease anyone who maybe is going to get too excited and then almost I feel like we'll get let down, because it is going to end up, I think, being basic is the best word I can think of for it, but not in the negative connotation of that word, but it's going to be kind of a generic story, I feel like, overall. It is still good guys, bad guys, and I know that we're saying we're getting into the gray, but they said some things in the dialogue, and I wrote some of it down, but I'm like, okay, this is still Star Wars. Again, it is more like adults could enjoy it, and it's what some of the adult fans have been asking for, but it's not like you can't let your kid watch this, for example, or anything, and that's not a bad thing that you can't let your kid watch it, but it is still has to play to that hand as well.
Yeah, Disney has Hulu for a reason. They bought Hulu for a reason, right? So they can put like more explicitly adult content, like R-rated with violence and sex and gore and stuff like that. They could put that on that platform. At least in the United States, they're not going to put that on Disney Plus. International markets, they have Star. They can put FX and Hulu content or whatever on that, and that's fine. They're not going to do that for like the mainline Disney Plus shows. However, I do still think that this is far different than everything Star Wars we've gotten since the Disney acquisition. We have actually good fucking dialogue. Some of the dialogue in Mando and Obi-Wan and Boba Fett is basically just exposition and less illuminating about characters. And we have a lot of that in this show. And we have small muted moments. For example, everything that's happening on the planet that Cassian goes to, I cannot say enough good about shooting on location. It brings a sense of spectacle and production value to this show that I feel is severely lacking in the majority of Disney properties right now. And that goes for not just Marvel and Star Wars, but everything else they're putting out. They all feel so sanitized. And I think what's so refreshing about this show is it does not feel that way. And, you know, again, we can talk ourselves to death about the adult elements of it and the fact that it's aimed at adults. And I think that really just comes down to like production value and the dialogue. Like you said, Duncan, I mean, it's still good guys versus bad guys. It's still a fairly straightforward morality tale when it comes to rebels versus empire. But what draws me in is the grays and how those goals get achieved. And I think that's very thematically resonant within this show, is, and it has always been within Star Wars, is you don't fight fascism by just saying you don't like it. You have to work within that system once it becomes so oppressive to a certain point and actively work to undermine it, even in the shadows. And that is on full display here with the interaction between Luthen and Mon Mothma. The way that they're scheming, to me, is just, that's the kind of in intrigue. I think intrigue is the best word for it that I've wanted from Star Wars live action that we really haven't gotten outside of the animated shows and the publishing arm of Lucasfilm. And that's what, for me, yeah, it's not like the most groundbreaking show or whatever. Completely agree. But like you said, Duncan, for Star Wars, I feel like this is, and this is a meme term, but it is new ground to an extent.
Yeah, everything you're saying is correct, or I agree with. I shouldn't say we're both right, but I do agree with everything you're saying. And I know I just sounded like I was maybe saying the opposite or sounding negative.
No, I don't think you were saying the opposite. I think you were just saying like, hey, let's not get too carried away.
Exactly.
This is not the most amazing show that's ever been made. I agree. But it definitely is a step up from kind of these simplistic morality tales that we've gotten from Star Wars up to this point.
Yes, definitely. And I didn't mention this in the first part, but maybe also part of it is my affinity for Rogue One, where part of me feels like what people think is so unique for this, I felt like we got a lot of that in Rogue One. And again, I know that maybe in hindsight or in recent years, or maybe it happened right away and I just wasn't aware of it, people have potentially soured on Rogue One to a certain degree. And a lot of that has to do with the complaints about a lack of memorable characters and stuff like that, which I'm not going to go into rant here, but I did like the characters when I saw it. I could be wrong. I'm not saying I'm right, or I liked the movie. But I remember the reaction, like I said, being that it felt like the most un-Star Wars, like it could exist outside of Star Wars movie out of any of the films. And a lot of that is it felt like a war movie with a Star Wars skin on it. And I know that's not an original thought, but I do feel like that's how I felt coming out of it. And maybe I'd have to rewatch it again more intently to decide if I think that I was coming at it with a young person's brain, maybe. But I don't think necessarily 100% I was. I think maybe there's a little bit of each there. But I do feel like maybe it's me defending my love for Rogue One, where I'm like, hey, we have gotten a little bit of this. And also, a lot of the stuff that he says and does feels very Han Solo. And I know I mentioned that I find myself most drawn to Han Solo, definitely out of the original characters. But maybe my love for him is also making me see a lot of that in Andor, which isn't a bad thing for Cassian to like have parallels to him at all. It's just part of my reasoning behind being like, all right, it's not completely unique. And maybe the best way to describe it is twofold. Like I said, I want to ease people down, so again, we don't get too excited and we can just enjoy it for what it is. And two, maybe it's me trying to defend the older properties, being like, no, come on, they were trying to do some of this already, which is me being a Star Wars fan and loving the franchise. But I do feel like we've dabbled in some of these already, maybe. And that's coming from someone who, me and Gardner both agree that it's not very deep of a story, the original trilogy. It's very black and white, good guy versus bad guy, which is whatever. It's not, doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Well, I think what separates this from Rogue One, for example, at least so far, you know, and we've got another 20 episodes to go of this whole entire series for me to be proven wrong, but this is about folks without special power. And Rogue One, as much of a straight up war movie as it is, they still felt the need to bring in the Darth Vader hallway scene and the Leia cameo, and then to throw in unnecessary cameos like the two guys that Luke meets in the cantina in episode 4. For some reason they're on Jedha, you know, for just no reason other than for the audience to be like, hey, look at these guys. And at least so far in, I don't know, 2 hours of this show that we've gotten so far, there's been none of that. It's purely political intrigue and spy games and ground level troops living in huts and herding fucked up looking sheep and building fires and doing really analog kind of stuff that to me gives it a unique feel aesthetically. Not necessarily that it's, I mean, it's still in the Star Wars world, right? So all those different like bigger elements are still going to be part of it. They're inexorable. They have to be there. But the fact that it's not relying on those things for me to point at the screen and say, I know that guy, or I know that event or whatever. They throw those things in there, bits and pieces. Like when Cyril Karn goes back to Coruscant and he's getting off of the transport, you can hear someone over the PAs like, hey, this transport is going to Hosnian Prime or whatever, which is where the Republic moves its headquarters to before the events of the sequel trilogy. And that's what gets destroyed in episode 7. There's stuff, if you pay attention enough, it's there, but it's not in your face. The focus is on the character drama. And I am on the other side of Duncan here, where I'm like, I like Rogue One. I think it's a fun movie. It's a good spectacle. But then you have moments like Baze putting his hand on Jen's shoulder and being like, you got this, little sister. And it's the first line of dialogue that they've exchanged between each other the entire movie. And it falls short. And I feel like this show is doing a lot to, if they have moments like that, make them feel earned. And I think that can be a complaint a lot of people levy against it, is it's slow. Like, let's be real, not a lot happened in this episode. It was mostly character stuff. But I am so starved for character stuff from this franchise when a lot of it is spectacle based, that is enough for me. And I don't know, maybe I'm just like an abused child in the basement, like getting tossed scraps. And I'm like, oh, at least I'm not sucking marrow out of the bone. I actually have a bit of meat on this, but it's enough for me to be into it.
Yeah, I think that it would be hard to argue that Star Wars fans don't have Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, I feel like that just goes without saying. It's like, yeah, we've been burned. As many of these movies are bad as they are good, but we're still here because we love experiencing this world. And like you said, Duncan, before, the world, it still feels like Star Wars, even though they're taking a different approach to it from the material. They're doing enough to make us feel like we're still in this galaxy.
I am interested, though. You mentioned the pacing of it, and I know you also brought it up in our recap of the first three episodes, but I haven't read reactions at all online. I've seen, which I guess this would have had to have been from critics, since they would have been the ones who saw them beforehand, but I saw the positive stuff before it came out. I haven't seen the audience reactions yet. I would be surprised if a lot of the, how do I put this, louder fans in the fan base, the more likely to complain fans, maybe. I would be surprised if they weren't concerned with some of the pacing. I could just see that being something that people would latch onto, especially if you're, from what it appears to me at least, looking sometimes for something to complain about. And this isn't a shot at any one person in particular. It's just, I'm thinking right now about like specific complaints that were levied against Kenobi, which you're allowed to not like Kenobi, but there were certain things that I was just like, all right, you went into this and you were going to hate it, you know, like talking about how it breaks the canon and stuff. It's like, no, it doesn't. I would be surprised though if you don't see some of that as well, because it does also, again, this also feels like where it's like doing half and half, where it's like you said in the first one, it's not a slow burn for something else, right? It is a slow burn for Star Wars, which again, this isn't like a negative thing. It's just, I think the truth of it, where we say it's unique or a slow burn, we mean, or I mean, I should say, I don't want to put words in anyone else's mouth, but I think what people mean is for Star Wars. And I think it's important to look at it that way if you're going to take that into account, I guess. It's to think about it as Star Wars slow burn, Star Wars uniqueness, not, oh, this is going to be, I don't know, the first thing that came to mind was like Legion is like a trippy show that's also based on a property that people know about and has a lot of fans, you know, that being an X-Men property. So it's not going to be like that, for example. It's not trying to twist your mind or be crazy, which I don't think you even really want in Star Wars, unless it's going to be something super weird, I guess. You'd have to like kind of prime people for that. But again, it is going to give you the normal storytelling, and it's going to, I think, work in many ways. We'll get into exactly what we did and didn't like in this episode. But what you said, Gardner, is true. Not a lot does happen in this episode. And that's not me complaining about it. It's again, just, I think we're pointing out things that are true about it and something that I could see the action-starved fans, not that they're actually starved, because there is a lot of action in it, but the people who are here, and again, this isn't a complaint against what they want, but the people who are here for the action, which is fine to be here for the action, might not enjoy something like this as much. So that's just something that I would be curious about, I guess. I don't really know what the reaction is there. But yeah, although, like you said, not a lot does happen, it is setting things up. And I think that it's doing a similar thing that the first three did, although they, like we said, tied up their own arc. And we'll see, Gardner, I know you said that the second season will be three episode arcs that will kind of have some time jumps as well, which you got from the horse's mouth, creators of the show. So he's not making that up, folks. But we don't know exactly if they're doing that specifically for this season as well. We do know that the first three definitely works like that. But because of that, because they kind of ended an arc and led into the rest of the series, like we were mentioning, this was another setup for this heist, quote unquote, that's going to happen now, which is fine. And we're introduced to some new characters. It's good. And we'll talk about some specific stuff that I definitely liked. And hopefully Gardner has some things that he likes as well. I know he does, because he's not been talking negatively at all about it. So that's part of the slow burn as well. But it is a lot of setup for now, four episodes. And I'm saying that as someone who does enjoy it, because I'm fine with the slow burn. And I'm almost saying like, hey, we could even push it further if we wanted to. But I do think it's smart to not scare off too many people. And also, as an audience, I think hopefully you can look at it as we're getting to something. And again, if it is those three episode arcs, you'll get a semi-climax at the end of each one. Obviously, each episode is going to have its own arc, but like a almost mid-season finale type situation, which will be fun and interesting. And so after all that, oh, don't give it too much credit. What I'm also saying is do give it a chance if you are worried about some of that slow burn, because I do think that you have to take into account that you're going to have more setup episodes than you would in a regular season of television because of these arc type things that we're going to have. And I think that each one is going to hopefully progress the character and the story, obviously, as well, and get us to, like we said, Rogue One as the quote-unquote series finale.
And I might be wrong, but I do think they're doing the three episode chunks this season and next season. It just feels like they're doing beginning, middle, and third act every three episodes, which gives also a lot of credence to what you and Joaquin were saying in our discussion of the first three episodes, is this could have been one big episode, because it essentially is one story. And then every three episodes is going to be its own story that builds on what came before, but could essentially also be like some sort of self-contained 90-minute Star Wars movie. And if that's what they're going for, I mean, I could be proven wrong 2 weeks from now, but it feels like that's what they're going for. And if that's the case, cool. I really can't think of any other show I've seen that has been structured in that way. I mean, can you?
No, I mean, honestly, the closest and most recent example I could think of is doing a time jump in episode 6 of your first season and recasting half the cast, which is what House of the Dragon just did.
yeah, true.
But that's more like a one-time thing, but it is the reset at the beginning, which this is almost half of that because we're using the same actors for anyone who's doing that, but we are doing another pilot almost.
And that comes from having a very deliberate plan for beginning to end. And I want to talk about specifics of this episode too. We're talking very generally right now, but I think that does come from, for example, House of the Dragon is based on something that covers what, like 200 years of history, right? So they're like, we know we're going to go from point A to point B. And the way that we can get there very creatively is that it affords us a lot of leeway. And I think it's the same thing with this show where it's like, we have 5 years to cover. And I think initially they wanted to do 5 seasons. They realized how expensive and how involved it was going to be to do that. Because I mean, no bones about it. Just by looking at this episode in particular, you can tell, yeah, this is definitely the most expensive show that they've made. That lends itself to tight, deliberate storytelling. And I think that's what we're going to continue to get. And it just feels, again, I'm going to probably use this word a bunch, but deliberate. Like, for example, the sequence where Luthen puts on his Coruscant gear in the spaceship before he lands on Coruscant and then goes in. And then he meets with Mon Mothma and they go into the back room. And then his demeanor instantly switches. They know what they're doing with these characters. They have a plan for them, which puts me at ease because I don't feel like any character is going to get assassinated. Any audience goodwill is going to be betrayed. That is a good feeling as someone who's going into the 7th season of Game of Thrones now and seeing what shitty writing looks like when you don't have a plan. I like that they have a plan.
So yeah, I'm glad that we did some discussion again of the overall feeling of it. And I think that kind of encompassed our overall feeling, not just of this episode, but of the first 3 as well, and kind of referenced some of our feelings about where it might go as well. So I think that's a good way to start it off and really hit on our thoughts on what they've done so far as a whole. And I think we've pretty much done this already, but we wanted to compare it to the first 3 episodes. I don't know if you have any big differences or changes that you felt like they maybe got better, got worse, I guess, or maybe even just stepped to the side, just different, but it was no better or worse. You're not picking one or the other.
Well, I definitely want to touch on scope. I think the scope was much expanded in this episode. And like I predicted, not that it was a tough prediction to make at all, but in our episode on the first 3 of Andor, Mon Mothma's storyline / Luthen's and how they intersect, and Cassian's being like the A and B plots, and seeing the contrast of the super opulent, pampered life on Coruscant and what the people on the ground have to go through in order to advance the rebellion. I love that. Well, for one, as a Star Wars nerd, I fucking loved getting to see Coruscant again. I haven't seen it since 2005, you know, and getting to see the ISB and what Mon Mothma's apartment looks like and Luthen's shop and his landing pad and just the insanely brutalist architecture and Cyril Karn going down to visit his mom. That whole sequence where you keep seeing him in these tiny little windows of these giant structures. To me, that was just pure visual storytelling, incredible set design. I mean, I was in awe of the practical sets that he was walking through. And then the combination of that with the CGI and everything. I mean, I could just go off. I could talk about Coruscant for this entire episode. But I think what they really did well in this episode was expanding the scope of this fight in the galaxy. And I think that does a lot to raise the stakes to see what's on the line. How many people are involved? How much money is involved? Yeah, I don't know. That shit just really, really, really worked for me. I'm going to have a hard time coming up with stuff I didn't like about this episode. I guess the pacing would be my one complaint. I guess I wish we could move things a little faster, but at the same time, I want it to take its time. So I don't know.
Yeah, I guess the point I'll make here is piggybacking off what you just said in terms of scope. And I liked in the first 3 episodes that I guess it was almost a private security company that was going after Andor in the first one. And that's who he killed. Because I was a little bit mistaken on that, I think, because I was commenting how, oh, we don't even see stormtroopers or anyone wearing any Empire stuff. And I guess they weren't even really associated with the Empire, which if they did mention that in the first 3, I missed. But it is cool how we see that. And then also in terms of scope, now we're getting the Empire and their relationship with that private organization and watching how that Andor situation actually leads to the Empire taking over and using that almost as an excuse to take over. Although I do get the sense that if nothing had gone wrong, it was just easier for them to let them continue to do it. And they would have. But as soon as there's any hiccup like that, that that's maybe embarrassing or shows that there might be cracks in the Empire they have to take over and really lay down the law. So I liked that. But really what I loved was, and I am going to kind of out myself as being a very shallow knowledge level Star Wars fan. I just kind of rewatched the movies and don't know that much about the lore. But getting to see, just first of all, the building that they were all in, just visually amazing. It looked phenomenal to me. The design behind it from beginning, whoever drew the concepts, then it being put onto screen by artists who did that, everything. It looked great. The idea behind it was great. I loved that. It was architecture I want to see in Star Wars. It looks Star Wars for sure, but it also was new. Just like everything is new at one point in Star Wars, which is always funny to me when people complain about like a new Force thing. Shooting electricity was new at one point. Now that's totally fine.
Force ghost.
Right, exactly. That's another example.
Just invented for episode 5.
But so they already had me there. I was like, fuck yeah, okay. This is what everyone was talking about when they're like, the show looks great. And then we're in the meeting room and they're decked out in their white Empire stuff. And I feel like maybe this is where I could be wrong and I'm showing my lack of knowledge, but I feel like you usually only see one guy in the white at a time because it's like he's the leader of a bunch of the guys in the darker gray stuff. I remember Mendelsohn wore white in Rogue One, if I'm not mistaken. And there's other people too. I mean, thinking about it, Tarkin wore gray, so I'm imagining it doesn't necessarily mean you're above people in gray, but I feel like you never saw that many people in white before, and here it's just very pristine. And again, Star Wars is not that. Star Wars, like we've said, is that retro futurism, and it looked sick, that whole scene. Even once we got inside, I was still blown away by the visuals, down to the costuming. Like I said, it looked like Star Wars again, but it looked like a part of Star Wars we hadn't seen exactly before. This was a base of people who were doing decision making, and they were getting yelled at for stuff that they weren't even involved in, but they were in charge of that sector or whatever. It's very, again, the bureaucratic side of the Empire, I feel like, and getting yelled at by your boss because some guy under you didn't do the right thing, and then yelling at them and his dumb Scottish friend raising his hand and you being like, what the hell, man? Are you serious right now? Stuff like that. It almost felt like a workplace drama, but obviously to an extreme, almost like a spy workplace drama, but with comedy elements too, obviously, I felt like, because it had the most attempted comedy of the episode with the three guys lined up getting yelled at, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, the ISB is basically like the Star Wars equivalent of the FBI or the CIA. And as far as I can tell, they're all at least lieutenants. And what really signifies within the Star Wars universe your rank is the bars on your chest, not necessarily the color of the uniform. I mean, it's a visual medium, and the white in the all-white room looks sick as fuck. It looks rad as hell. There's no denying it. And it's also very Coruscant-y. And the Empire during this time is very racist in the sense that they're very human-centric. They don't really fuck with other species very much at all, which is exemplified in that scene. It's only humans around that table. They're all wearing all white. That aspect of the bureaucracy is very much emphasized in that scene. And I think it's really interesting. I'm really interested to see what happens with that character. And I cannot remember her name for the life of me right now, but very interesting. And I think she's an interesting counterpoint to Cyril Karn, who was the corpo rent-a-cop dude from the first three episodes. We've seen him fall now, right? He's returned to his mom on Coruscant. She slapped him. He said, hello, mother. And that was the extent of his presence in this episode. But as far as I can tell, they're maybe middle class, living on like the middle levels of Coruscant. They're not super high up in the skyscrapers, but they're not all the way down in the slums either. And she's definitely got a reacher element about her where she's trying to work her way up. And it'll be interesting to see how that's countered within the Empire, because I mean, she's surrounded by men too. So misogyny is definitely going to have an element to play within her role there. And exploring those elements within fascism, the traditionalism, the we have to stick to only having humans and only having men and yada, yada, yada. If that's the direction they go with that character and that aspect of the storyline, and I think she and Cyril Karn are going to cross paths at some point, and he's either going to join her side, like we talked about in our discussion of the first three episodes, and double down super hard on the Empire, or the fact that the Empire has come in and basically fucked him over because of the mistake he made, and he's going to be bitter about it and want revenge on the Empire. I'm very interested in his storyline, because like we talked about in our first discussion of this, he's very much the kid who reminds the teacher that they forgot to assign homework. I think they may either serve as parallels to one another or as perpendicular to one another in terms of what their arcs are. And I'm very interested to see that. And I just hope we get to see a lot more of Coruscant, because it looks amazing in this show.
Agreed. Like I said, everything looks amazing. That's not going to ever be my complaint on these first four episodes. I think that a lot of thought went into this. You mentioned mentioned how any cameos and things that we know about will be relevant because they weren't written in for any purpose other than that's where the story took them. And you can always say that, so I guess take it with a grain of salt. But I do have to say, based on what feels like a good amount of care that has been put in so far to it, I'm inclined to believe that there's not going to be too much gratuitous stuff. And obviously the big inclusion of this episode was the mention of Scarif and there being an influx of production materials, I believe is the way it was phrased, and that they were just monitoring it and it was a preventative measure before anything got out of hand. They're just checking it out, which obviously great job there, guys.
Yeah, well, that's a lore deep cut also. That's a major plot point in Timothy Zahn's new canon trilogy of Thrawn books. Thrawn, who we're going to see in the Ahsoka series, meets with Director Krennic and they're basically competing. Thrawn wants to build a fleet of TIE Defenders, which are TIE fighters with three wings and hyperdrive capabilities, which we only see in the Rebels TV show. And Krennic is trying to build the Death Star and all that is going out to Scarif and stuff like that. And that's how he finds out about it. And Thrawn gets invited to... Anyway, that's a deep cut towards that part of the lore. And I like the winks and nods. For example, Luthen's gallery. There's a ton of Easter eggs in that scene. If you pause and look, he has the father, son, and the daughter's hands that I think they have something to do with the World Between Worlds in Rebels. He has like that mural chopped up. You see these hands on a piece of stone painted in. That's straight up from Rebels. He's got Starkiller's armor from The Force Unleashed in there. He's got a bunch of other trinkets in there that are little Easter eggs. And I like when Star Wars does that, where they just throw it in the background. Like I said, the Hosnian Prime reference earlier in the episode, they throw that in their bits and pieces instead of putting it in your face and being like, hey, remember this? Clap, cheer. Let's scale it back a little bit and let the character drama take center stage. And then all the lore stuff can just be supplementary for the people who really, really are into it, like me.
Folks, you can thank Gardner by sending him a 5-star review for GDT. Because like I said, I will never be able to bring you that kind of insight, but we do appreciate Gardner knowing the deep cuts like that and bring them to you, because to me that was just a Rogue One reference, but there's so much more. And obviously if you're into the comic books right now, there's some really good runs going out.
There is a comic of Thrawn, but there's the canon novel trilogy, Thrawn, Thrawn Allegiances, and Thrawn Treason. And then there's the prequel trilogy of the Thrawn novels, the Thrawn Ascendancy books. Those are really good too. But if you're interested in stuff that take place during the OT, look at Thrawn Allegiances and Thrawn Treason. Those are solid and they overlap with Rebels and Rogue One.
There you go. More insight and even some suggestions on what to read if you're interested on learning more about it. So again, thank you to Gardner, and not just comics, but also books. My low level, not insight, but commentary on it was that I was even going to say that, not knowing that it was a reference to even deeper stuff, that I felt like it wasn't even just a wink, but setting things up that were going to probably become a factor at some point during this story, if not in the first 12, which maybe it will be in the first 12, at least I think at some point during the second season, since again, we've mentioned now a couple times on this episode and the last one that Gardner, you read from the creators that it can be looked at as Rogue One being a quote unquote series finale for this 2-season run, which is what I, before knowing that, even expressed, maybe not on the recording, but definitely to you beforehand, would be amazing. I love that kind of thing. Lead me right into something I know. Fill in all the gaps for me. I like that kind of stuff. But because we know that, and because he, like you've mentioned, Gardner, has mentioned that everything was where the story took them, I felt like mentioning this is potentially just good storytelling, because you're setting up what will become relevant later on. So even if you hadn't seen Rogue One, it would just go over your head, but then on a rewatch, you're like, oh, look, they even mentioned that Scarif was going to become relevant later on, which, if that is true, it does, and this is not a complaint, but just maybe a thought that I have in a parallel universe, would this be something I would maybe enjoy a little bit more, is not even because of prequel syndrome, just is it more interesting if it's just a brand new character? And I know last time I think I was talking, maybe it could be Han Solo, but that was just me saying we should also have more Han Solo stuff, and I love Alden Ehrenreich, like we said.
Well, did you catch that little Solo reference that they made this episode?
Tell us what it is.
So Cassian talks about the fact that he was on Mimban, and then Luthen was like, yo, you were a cook. But that's where Alden is when he runs into Woody Harrelson.
Okay.
He's on Mimban as a soldier.
Gotcha. So that's when Chewbacca and him are in the pit together?
Correct. Yeah. So they were on that planet at the same time.
I did not know that. I'm never going to be great with remembering the planets in these unless it's like a huge one, but I can't even remember characters' names in most movies. But even though I always will want more Han Solo action, and even though I like this series for what it is and don't want less Diego Luna, Luna as Cassian Andor. I just am curious about this story being told with a completely new character. And to further that point, this is something that is definitely not a complaint because it would have to exist in an alternate universe. But again, not even because of prequel syndrome, but if Rogue One doesn't exist, and then obviously it can just be Cassian Andor because then he doesn't exist. It is a new character still, but it could still be this character. Could it be a better story in the sense that could you tell this same story that they want to tell right now visually and actual storytelling sense in a more interesting way that could maybe almost string the audience along? And I don't mean that in the general use of that phrase, but kind of imply things that would almost go half over your head, that maybe you would see that as a reference to Thrawn, for example, but you wouldn't know that Jaden Erso and Cassian end up there and it explodes and they're sitting on the beach. You wouldn't have that outcome pictured in your mind. I don't know. I only say that not because, again, it can't be a complaint because Rogue One does exist, duh. But I mean it in a sense where if you're Tony Gilroy, can you do the story that you want to tell right now, the same story you're telling right now, in a more interesting way? I only say it because I feel like he is pushing the boundaries and we are calling it unique in certain ways, but I feel like almost if it existed by itself, he could push it to the point where I felt like it was unique for a TV show, not just for a Star Wars show, if that makes sense, to kind of bring it back to that original point. I know it's taking me a while to get there, but the idea is that I think that they're doing a good job with this story right now, and I think I see a lot of aspects of good storytelling, like you've said, Gardner, down to better dialogue than you often see in Star Wars properties, but it almost makes me think that he would be better equipped to handle and express those boundary pushing aspirations in Star Wars if he had a clean slate and could play more with almost the mystery of it. I'm kind of shying away from the word mystery, but I think that you could imply things that on a second watch would be more rewarding if we don't know these characters. And again, not even because of prequel syndrome, because I know this guy dies, I know this guy doesn't, but just because we have a series finale that we have seen. You know, as much as I love that idea, this does exist as a bridge show. As much as it is separate from things and it is telling stories of how he got there and stuff, and we are having characters that we don't know where they end up, is he almost wasted is not the right word because I don't want to go that far because again, I'm enjoying this, but could he do more boundary pushing, definitely Star Wars pushing stuff in a clean slate story?
Well, do you feel like he's constrained? Because earlier, I mean, at least I was, I don't know if you were, singing the praises of a show like House of the Dragon, where they have a definitive endpoint, right? And that allows them to be more judicious with the plotting of the mainline show, right? Because they know where they're headed instead of trying to make it up as they go along. And I can see where you would say they are constrained because they have to get to a certain point. So it limits the plot twists or new things that they can introduce into the canon in this particular series. But I think it's a double-edged sword where at the same time, they are able to be very intentional with the choices that they make for characters and plot lines. Like, for example, Cassian just going to this planet and tucking in with a group of revolutionaries that are subsisting out in the middle of nowhere in like the Scottish Highlands, essentially, because they know that they can work it back to an endpoint that is already set in stone. And maybe that's a more esoteric question about writing in general and whether you would rather write open-ended or closed-ended. But do you really feel like that is a hindrance? I don't know. I'm not trying to say you're wrong. I'm posing that question.
I think it's an interesting question. I'm glad that you asked it because I actually want to address, not in an argument way. I feel like address there kind of sounds like...
No, please do. I mean, it's not an argument. It's a discussion.
Right. I want to tell you my feelings on them. And the first thing you said is, and the main point, I guess, obviously, is does it seem like he's restrained? And I don't think so. No, that's, I guess, not what I'm saying necessarily. And I get how I'm not articulating it 100% correctly because it's not necessarily something where, I'm definitely not saying I'm right, but I could be just completely wrong is my point, or even something that I can necessarily understand completely myself because it's more of a feeling. But this is going to sound silly, but we were talking about the mention of Scarif, and really it kind of started blossoming this idea in my head, and I could be just completely going on a tangent, but I like the idea of if you don't know, if you haven't seen Rogue One, or if it just doesn't exist, but I guess it could work if you just haven't seen it, but you're writing for this show for people who you assume have seen Rogue One. But if it doesn't exist or you haven't seen it, I think if we do end up getting to Scarif at some point, how much do we actually show in this finale? Like, is it literally the opening scene of Rogue One is the last scene of the final episode? Or because that is something that I would actually personally be fine with, but I can see people having an issue with being a little over the top with the bridging. So I don't necessarily think they're going to go that way, but who knows exactly how far into the timeline of Rogue One we actually do get, because obviously Jin is alive right now. So, but anyway, I think if Scarif becomes a somewhat central plot point near the end or at some point in season 2, it doesn't even have to be the climax of the season. I think then if you haven't seen Rogue One, a rewatch is more rewarding, being like, oh, they set it up right here in the 4th episode of the first season, because people always now in this day and age where you can rewatch stuff a million times and there's YouTube videos breaking everything down, people are always going crazy, and I do it too, and I'm not even saying it's a bad thing, but maybe me and everyone else goes a little too crazy for it because then it pushes people to do it too much. But those like references from seasons ago, and I feel like one of the first examples, and I think a really well done one, is the Beetlejuice one in Community, which took three seasons worth of build up to that. And who knows if when they first said it they knew it, or if they came up with it the second time they said it, or if they did it twice and then realized it and were like, all right, we should do it the third time. Who knows the writing process behind that, but that's one of those things that people brought up. But that's not even a great example because it's really just a mention of Scarif. But it just got me thinking that because I like so much of what they've done so far, and because, like you mentioned, the storytelling and dialogue feels elevated from what Star Wars usually is, at least. And he definitely, as a showrunner and creator of the show, feels more than competent and able to handle it. I don't feel like he's restrained here. I just feel like there might be other things that could benefit a rewatch later on if this series was given that opportunity, which it exists in a world where it can't be given that opportunity, really. Which is fine. Again, it's fine. And it's not like he's wasted on this, which I was hopefully clear about before. Wasted's the wrong word, but I do feel like maybe he would have more fun to play in the sandbox had he a clean slate. And that's a good point though, Gardner. It's not like anything I'm watching right now feels restrained or feels like he's being told what to do or like he can't go a direction he wants to. I don't feel like I'm getting that vibe from it at all. It's really meant, in my opinion, as a compliment. I feel like what it's doing well. And maybe it's just me pushing like what I would rather, or almost feel like I might rather, in a show that's doing such cool things. I feel like I just think that because he's able to create a show like this, maybe he creates something even cooler if he had a clean slate, which again, I want this show to exist as well. So that could just be the next thing he does. So it's not really a complaint about this at all. But then talking about the House of the Dragon stuff as well, I will say with Game of Thrones, the original more so, but this also is based on stuff that was already written. It's a little bit different because the original book was created out of thin air, right? So George R. R. Martin was making those twists, and the people reading that book the first time were getting to experience it in an open sandbox, if that makes sense. I know House of the Dragon is still a show that is bridging a gap, but it does still, I think, have a little bit of that problem where, even though I don't care because I care about these characters and I don't personally know where they end, it does have somewhat of the prequel syndrome where whatever does happen here will eventually exist in a world where we know what happens. And Rings of Power is kind of the same way. Those are worlds where we do know the end result, but that doesn't matter because in 2022, if you know what happens, that doesn't mean someone can't tell an interesting story about something that happens in 1915, for example, or any other time. So that is true, but it lingers in the back of your mind, I think, that you know where King's Landing goes, but also it's interesting to see it in its glory.
Which, bringing it back to Star Wars, we've got The Acolyte coming out next year, and that is set only, I think, 100 years before The Phantom Menace. And then we've got, from the publishing arm, The High Republic, which the first phase starts 200 years before The Phantom Menace. And then the second phase starts, I think, 60 years before the first phase. So 260 years. Let's go even further back, man.
Exactly.
Let's really explore this phase of the galaxy where we know absolutely nobody. I mean, Yoda is still in the High Republic because that motherfucker is 1,000 years old when he dies in the original trilogy.
Yeah, that's probably partially why they do that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, you have to have the familiar face.
Which I get. I mean, it is a business, unfortunately.
At the end of the day, which is why they did the whole thing in Book of Boba Fett with reuniting Mando and Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have the familiar face, which is okay, whatever, fine. I can get over it. But I'm with you. I would love to see if Tony Gilroy can do this good of a job with a character whose timeline is so truncated. We know where he's going to end up. All these other characters too. I mean, Mon Mothma, Saw Gerrera, we know where they end up. We know what's happening in this timeline of the galaxy, and he can still make it this interesting and fresh. If we were to give him just a chunk of the universe, and he probably will never do it again because he's talked about how exhausting this show has been. But if we were able to give him or someone like him, give me a Denis Villeneuve 700 years before the Skywalker saga, 2,500 years before, put it right in the Old Republic. What could you possibly lose? That is going to be fantastic. Give us a new event franchise with characters that we care about. That is what it all comes down to. If you can find someone who can write believable characters, then give them the fucking property. I mean, Cassian or Clem in this episode arrives on on this planet, and we get a great sense of these folks within the first 3 minutes of meeting them, just in the way they interact with one another before they even met Cassian. Give me that style of writing anywhere else, any other period in the galaxy, and I think it's going to be a hit.
I agree again with everything you're saying, pretty much, if not everything exactly, but I think we can probably get to final thoughts soon. I think we've touched on a lot of it. I do want to make one last comment, because I know you were talking about the idea also of having an endpoint, which I'm a little bit torn on the idea, because I feel like people's love for shows that have a ending written before they even write the pilot, or when they write the pilot, which I know Better Call Saul had that, and other shows too. My maybe all-time favorite show, definitely one of them, Dark. I know they knew where it was going to end. That's a 3-season German show on Netflix. I don't know if it aired originally on Netflix, but in America it is a Netflix original. And both of those examples, for instance, I love those shows. And I think Dark definitely is partially great because they had a plan and they weren't getting stuck in limbo. Better Call Saul, I think they only really had to do that because of what you were saying, Gardner, bridging the gap idea of Andor, for example. The point is, I think it can be really well done, but I also think that it has led to maybe some over-structuring of shows that used to be a little more free and you could have more fun with. And I also think it stems from people's supposed hatred of Lost. I think that was the point where people thought that you needed to have an end written already, because people, I think, felt like they were just writing stuff and they never really solved everything. And first of all, you don't really have to tie every loose end. I'm not going to get into a Lost rant right now, but I think part of that is because there is the famous story where they wrote the episode about Jack's tattoos because people at Fox basically wanted them to just keep running Lost forever because everyone kept watching Lost, and they were like, no, we need to end it eventually. So they wrote that episode as an example of, here's the quote unquote crap you're going to get if we have to write forever. We're going to have to come up with storylines like this. And people knew about that story. So I think that also influenced people's idea that the lack of it being pre-planned led to what they felt like was maybe jumping the shark type storylines, which I don't agree with, but again, won't get into how much I love Lost right now. But because I liked the way that show went, I don't like that. I feel like that idea is pushed back to that. But at the same time, I feel like one of my biggest complaints about the most recent Star Wars trilogy is that they went into it and just wrote each story and didn't have an overarching theme / actual story for the entire trilogy. But that's where we're bringing it back to Star Wars there. And that's my kind of, again, hesitancy to go full-blown. Yes, I like that we know where we're going from the get-go, because I think that you lose a little bit of the fun aspect. But again, for shows like Dark, I mean, they nailed it because of that. But because I love the way that went, I do think some shows benefit from it, but we've gone too far in that aspect, I think. And that's not even Andor's problem, because they have to have an ending, because it's not like, we have it in our head. Like, we've seen where his ending is. So it would be kind of weird to end it a year before that. It's like, all right, why don't we just see the next year, right? So it kind of makes the most sense. And they've told us, and you've told us, and I've regurgitated a couple times now that that is where we're ending. So in this show, I don't think it'll be an issue. I don't really think it'll be a benefit either, though. It's not like, we have this plan, because you can still go crazy ways. You could still do the quote unquote issues with Lost in this show, because you're covering such a large time span.
I think you make a good point about like leading up to the ending and whether we've seen it or not already versus whether it's in the creators' heads. And again, we're only on the 4th episode of this show, so a lot remains to be seen, but I am currently very optimistic, and I hope Lucasfilm hears people's feedback about this show and leans into this kind of storytelling more than what they've been giving us up until this point. And we'll probably have to wait a couple years until we get back to this kind of storytelling, because I know they haven't even started filming season 2 yet. They're filming The Acolyte now. They've already filmed Mandalorian season 3. They're either already filming or they've just wrapped filming on Ahsoka. So we're going to get the kind of standard Lucasfilm content for the next year or so. But I hope, fingers crossed, going forward, they get the message that what we're really hungry for is something a little more elevated. And I don't use that in a disparaging way towards the other shows. I like the other shows, fine. But this is more of what I want. And I just hope that they can learn that lesson and lean into that going forward.
Yeah, there's definitely positive lessons to be learned from this show so far. And I don't think I've noticed any negative ones. But with all that being said, and with episode 4 in the books and our discussion of it in the books, we can now get to our final thoughts, where we can sum up everything we've talked about. But the most exciting part is you get to find out our rating out of 10 of Andor episode 4. Gardner, you're up first.
Yeah, this show just gets better episode after episode, week after week. I hope that trend continues. This episode was awesome. It gave us Mon Mothma content. It gave us Luthen operating between different worlds. It gave us Cassian being an outsider in a very grassroots rebellion. What else could you possibly want from this show? For me, this is a 9.2 wigs out of 10. If the show continues on this trend, I will be more than happy and stoked to talk about it week after week. I mean, this has just revitalized my love for Star Wars so much, and I hope everyone else is enjoying it as much as I am.
Yeah, like we've said the entire time, and like you've said, Gardner, positive things to be said about this episode. I will throw some hate in right now for the unskippable intro at the beginning. Don't tell me to skip intro and only skip the BS Star Wars one, which Gardner and I were also hating on beforehand because it's a little generic and could probably be replaced at this point. But I don't hate the Andor logo, but I don't need 8 seconds of that after hitting the skip intro button. I thought I made my intentions clear there. So little hate right there. Again, just love the Star Wars aesthetic. So I'm in from the beginning. I didn't mention this, but even when they have the brief shot of the TIE fighters zooming past them, and I'm sure that there's like a cliff there and they're not ground level, but because of the angle you're looking at, it almost looks like they're a couple feet off the ground, and it's just so badass looking. I'm a sucker for Star Wars aesthetics, and that's one of my favorite parts about getting Star Wars from 2015 on, is that technology has really advanced to the point where we can see, and not even in a CGI way all the time, but where we have learned how to make movies look really cool, I think, in a sci-fi way if done right. And I think a lot of times in these shows, for me at least, they've done that, Mandalorian being a great example of it. So that's really my biggest takeaway from it so far, is that aesthetically it looks amazing and the story is working for me. Not going crazy for it, but no complaints about it. Again, it's not too slow or anything. It's just, I think that right now I'm just too much of a sucker for twists and turns, and this is more for your seasoned veteran viewer that doesn't need circus tricks to entertain them, but who knows. I will mention, I didn't say that we have the classic rejection to the call of action, which again shows that this is another beginning, I think. Almost a second pilot, like I had mentioned earlier. Again, the one shot of humor I really did like, and I can see some people not really maybe loving that scene, but it did work for me. Being Scottish and everything, I think that accent is just gonna make me happy at all times, so that's definitely part of it. But I just thought it was silly that the raising your hand when you're not supposed to thing, I think, is always gonna be a bit that lands with me. So again, competent. I don't remember what I gave it for the first three episodes, but what I am going to give it is 8.1. What's all this? 10 out of 10. And that wraps up our discussion from GDT of Andor episode 4. We will be back next Thursday, a week from today, with the recap of episode 5. And hopefully we'll have someone else on that episode as well, so that you can hear some other opinions as well. But you might be stuck with me and Gardner. Hopefully you didn't hate this one too much. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for staying till the end of the episode. We appreciate all of our listeners at GDT. Remember, not just the Thursday episodes, but we are also back with our full episodes on Fridays. The next one will be our interview with Dennis Mallon. Like I said, he has been in many, many things, but we will also link in this podcast description ways to watch his short films and also ways to watch feature films that he has been in as well. So you can really get to know some of his stuff. Like I said earlier, you've already seen him because he's been in so many things. There's no way you've missed every movie he's been in. So you've seen at least one thing he's been in already, but we'll show you how to expand your knowledge on Dennis, and stay tuned for that as our next full-length Friday episode with Gardner and I. And next week, we're also back with the MCU episodes. Like I said, Thor Love and Thunder will be next Wednesday, and then going forward, those will be weekly on Wednesdays. Stay tuned for all of those future GDT episodes, and in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at GoodDataPod, and on Facebook at GDT Podcast, and you can listen to us. I mean, you're doing it right now, but if you don't know, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's right, you can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, most of the free ones as well. So look us up by searching the letters GDT on any of those platforms, and you can find us, subscribe to us so you never miss an episode, and like I said earlier, leave us a 5-star review if you want to. We love those 5-star reviews. We definitely appreciate them, but subscribing is the most important thing so that you don't miss any episodes. You can follow along and catch all of our weekly episodes, Andor and anything else. That is all for this week, folks. Again, thank you guys for listening. We will talk to you again next episode.
As always, folks, we love you. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one. Peace.